Hello, airport industry folks. Welcome to the AX Insider Podcast, and thank you for tuning in. I'm Andy Telejohn, the senior writer at Airport Experience News. This podcast will be part of our 20 Years, 20 Voices series, celebrating the upcoming 20th Airport Experience Conference. During these calls, we're talking with industry veterans who've overseen the evolution of the airport industry over the last 20 years, particularly with concessions and customer service over the last two decades and change. Today, we're talking with Rick Piccolo, president and CEO of the Sarasota-Bradenton International Airport. Fred was recently honored by the FAA's Southern Division as its Airport Manager of the Year, I believe for the second time, and he was one of ARN's Directors of the Year back in 2010 before we changed our name. He's been in this role since 1995. Thanks for taking some time, Rick. It's good to talk to you.
Oh, good to be with you, Andrew.
Appreciate you taking some time. I've been asking folks what got them into aviation and into airports and what kept them in the industry. And in doing some research, you got your start in the airport as a janitor at Buffalo International Airport. Is that correct?
That's correct. Right after graduating from high school, I needed a job. So I got a job as the first time I'd ever been to the airport was when I got my job.
Is that right?
And worked as a janitor there for about a year and a half, got applied for a job out on the airfield in airfield maintenance and got promoted to that. Was out there about 3 months and got drafted in the military. So it tells you how old I am. And went into the military for a couple of years, came out, came back to my job at airfield maintenance and started working my way up in some of the maintenance jobs while I went to school at night on the GI Bill, which my wife convinced me to do. Because I really liked the job I was in and wasn't really interested in doing much else. And then when I got my degree, in the interim there while I was working on the airfield, I also was the union president. And then when I got my degree, I went to a retirement party for a management person and Buffalo Airport's under a multimodal authority. So the subways, the bus line, the airport, and the seaport all run by the Port Authority, and the person who ran all that asked me if I wanted to get into management, and I said yes. That's why I went to school. So I went and got a foreman's job at the seaport, was there about 6 months. He sent me back to the airport as assistant to the airport manager, not assistant airport manager. They already had one of those, and I worked for Larry Hedrick. And Larry saw some abilities in me. And after a while, I started becoming kind of a troubleshooter for him. And that's how I started moving around in the business. A job came open in Tampa because my mother-in-law called me and said they were moving to St. Petersburg and wanted us to move to Florida. And so I sent a resume off to Tampa International just to shut her up, figuring I didn't know there was any job openings. I just sent it off at one of those blind things that I thought they would file 13. And what ended up happening, they called me a couple of weeks later, flew me down. I was interviewed, spent a couple of days there with the interview process they had, because they also had in those days of George Bean, they had an industrial psychologist examining you for over a day.
Wow.
And I ended up getting the job as assistant director of operations there before my in-laws moved. Went to Tampa, was 3 years there, 9 years at St. Pete Clearwater Airport as assistant airport director, and then got the job here in 1995. And I've always joked, I keep moving my way south to in the industry, but I'm running out of real estate because the next stop would have to be Cuba. But
you are. But you traded cold weather for warm for sure, up here in Minnesota. That doesn't feel like a bad move around the end of the calendar.
No, it wasn't. But not something that, from the standpoint of, was I an aviation nut growing up and all that? No, it just was in the beginning. The janitor job was just a job and a paycheck. And I did enjoy the airfield maintenance job and did a lot of snowplow work for 13 years there. Snow removal plans here are easy. You just wait for the sun to come up.
I was going to say, at least they've got somebody in Florida with some experience getting rid of snow if you ever do need it. Weather patterns do get a little weird these days. You never know. What was it that made you decide to stay in airports? I mean, you know, I mean, I, I get that you liked that that maintenance job, but you know, there had to be something that, you know, pulled you in the direction of management as well, and keeping moving up the chain.
Well, actually, it was once I got that first job when they sent me back to the airport as assistant airport director. I think it was really Larry saw some abilities in me, and he started giving me more and more both difficult assignments, but also stuff that kept me moving around and made it very interesting. And I really enjoyed it. And that's where I started to get really the bug of aviation. And that's where I really started to enjoy it so much and knew that I really wanted to run an airport someday. And so I started looking at what my career opportunities would be in the long run. And so it was kind of happenstance at first to get into it. But once I got into the management side, I really enjoyed it. And the challenges were great. And the thing I like about the industry is it's so dynamic. It can change overnight. Things like 9/11 had a tremendous impact on our industry. COVID's had a tremendous impact. So it can change overnight, whereas a lot of industries are kind of incrementally changed, but not dynamically changed like they can here.
Sure, yeah. It can change for the good or it can change for the bad, but it never stays the same. Rick, one thing that, you know, in talking to you and your experience and a few of the other interviews we've done for this project, you mentioned Larry Hedrick, I believe, and, you know, mentorship seems to be a really big key in getting some folks to stick around in the industry. Staffing issues all over the place these days, baby boomers retiring. Can you just, I mean, talk about, you know, what that experience meant from that perspective? And if you're trying to do anything at Sarasota right now in terms of, you know, bringing new folks in or mentoring them along the way and getting them into leadership roles?
Sure. It's critically important. It was critical to my career. Larry was a great influence and gave me a lot of leeway. The second person that was a big influence was George Bean when I was at Tampa International and sitting and talking with him. He was really a rock star in the industry in those days. And then the third boss I worked for, Jim House, who was at St. Pete Clearwater, was very challenging. He was very demanding. And at the time, at times I would get frustrated, but every time I thought we had done the best job we could, if he wasn't satisfied and sent you back to do it again, I started to learn that you actually could do better. And so those three were great influences on me. And the thing that I've liked about all those directors and that I try to emulate both in trying to coach people as to what they do, whether they're students or whether they're workers for us, but also to support them as they go to others. Some bosses don't like you leaving and get angry when you apply. Everyone I had was supportive of when I'd apply to another airport, because in our industry, you gotta move from one city to another most of the time. It's not like there's 10 airports there. I often tell students, it's not like a bank president's job where you can go from one bank to the other. When you move, you move. And I had support from all of them. So I tried to support. We've lost some good people here, but not. I've never been angry about it and always been happy for them that they can hopefully move up in their career just like I had those opportunities. We also have we do internships. We have a unique thing going right now where on our property, starting next year, is a charter school, a K-12 charter school that is 83% minority and 96% economically disadvantaged children. We have an A&P school that we're building with the local technical college, and we're working with the university on an aerospace engineering program. And so what we're looking at is the opportunity to take children from kindergarten through high school, through technical school or university, and never leave airport property. And I don't know if there's going to be another airport in the country that can say that. And that's something that's near and dear to my heart, trying to get this educational program going, especially for kids that, you know, most kids think of flight attendants and pilots when they think of aviation. And we're trying to expose kids to all the stuff that's here, even the retail and food and beverage aspects of airports, but also police, fire, accountants, IT people. I mean, there's a myriad of jobs on airports that kids can get exposed to and hopefully get the bug like I did eventually. And I think it's great. And I hope I'm an example that you can start at the probably the lowest job there is and someday maybe run the place. So
Yeah, you did you worked your way up for sure. No question about that. And you're as the head guy at Sarasota Bradenton. This is Rick Piccolo, president and CEO of Sarasota Bradenton International Airport. That comes with jobs like overseeing capacity issues and massive growth, which you've been dealing with over the last couple of years since the COVID recovery has been in effect. I was reading you've gone from 6 airlines to 11, 12 nonstop destinations to 54. What kind of challenges that brought on? I know you've got a big project that you're doing right now to help start to address that as well.
Yeah, it just was such a surprise. COVID actually spurred this tremendous growth. We're up 300% over our pre-pandemic numbers. I mean, there's some airports that still haven't gotten back to the pre-pandemic numbers. And so we've gone from 1.3 million passengers a year. We'll hit 4.3 million this year. And we're growing at 14.5% right now this year. It presents these challenges. So the one thing we're doing, we have about $200 million worth of work going on. We have a new baggage system for about $50 million that's being built. We have a ground-based boarding terminal we're building, wing for 5 more gates, which is already, Allegiant has already committed to the whole terminal. So that's a 40% increase in the number of gates they have now. So we're going to see some more increases once we open that, which is due to open in December of next year. So we're growing so quickly, and it does not look like it's going to slow down much. The community's growing as well. So the challenge is both trying to catch up and maintain the level of convenience and service that we've been known for when we had 1.3 million passengers. And when you grow that fast, for example, our baggage system that we're building will be very good. But in the meantime, what we have is we have about 20 people on the payroll who do nothing but stand around the baggage belts. And if a machine breaks down or a belt breaks down, they move the bags by hand. And that's so that we can make sure we maintain that level of convenience. We have 2,100 paved parking spaces. We're building 3 parking lots right now, surface lots. Over the holidays, we park about 4,500 cars. So last year, we were parking cars actually on our air carrier ramp. We had to fence off a piece of it and do that. So there's just no playbook on 300% growth. And so the effort has been to maintain that level of convenience while we get the capital programs completed that'll adjust to that. So this year, we should have the parking spaces we need, but then we have to build even more, not just for the future growth, but we need about 1,000 extra spaces so that then we can eventually go vertical over the parking lot in front of the terminal and take care of it permanently. And so there's just the immediate challenges, and then there's the future challenges so that we can get to a point where it's a little more normal. So those are the big projects. We built a new cell phone lot. We're building a new ground transportation center, as I said, new baggage system, $100 million terminal extension. And then from a food and beverage and retail standpoint, there's the short-term issues of building temporary facilities because we're growing so fast and the demand is there. But also, coincidentally, all our agreements were expiring this past year. So we're out on the street now with the RFP. Next month, we should be making decisions on who is awarded that. And then that kind of development of all those facilities will take the next year to do as well while we build a new terminal and we're doing expansion in the existing terminal and reconfiguring some of that as well. So there's not too much here that isn't either under some sort of shovel or construction. And so it makes it a challenge. We bought 10 shuttle buses in the last year so that we can try and make sure that when people need to utilize the more remote lots that we're building, that it goes very quickly and we can maintain our level of convenience until we can go vertical.
At that kind of growth, you're going to need to be parking passenger cars in your driveway for a while there. Airport directors, airport officials have, you know, this unique ability to balance the need to keep people, you know, keep things available for people to fly in and out on a daily basis while also working on those construction projects, trying to get the capacity going for down the line and doing that at the same time and making it look seamless. I'm wondering, you've been through a number of these now and have been at the airport for, I think you said 95 or 96 when you got there. What are some of the amenities that passengers are going to see now in these new gates and in this new area, that wouldn't have even necessarily been thought about back when you were working on capacity issues early on in your tenure? How has that evolved and changed over the years?
Well, certainly the technology adds a lot to it, both from the check-in process all the way through your concessions. The retail where you can do self-checkout, where you can do QR codes and apps to order your food before you even get there or buy a product off your phone and just pay for it with Apple Pay or something like that. So I think those are some of the things that make that are big changes from the old days. I look for the technology to continue to speed up the process. I think the next step in that technology from an experience at the airport will be both as check-in for your bags, where you start to get to more and more of the common use bag check-in. Now, all our gates are common use for our airlines. So the way our airline agreements work, they have preferential gates, but not exclusive gates. Yeah. And we use some software to schedule aircraft. And at the same time, every gate is common use, so they can utilize any gate and get into their own system. So that gives us much better utilization of gates. And so the technology continues to make things more efficient and it gives us more capacity without having to build more. And then the same with the concessions and retail. One of the things we're looking at as we look through some of the proposals is what kind of technology are they proposing to utilize so that the experience is better, especially as everywhere, what we're finding is the worker labor shortage impacts the level of service. So whenever you can utilize the technology to speed up that level of service and have things taken care of without having to have a person do it, it is an important part of the airport experience. The same with parking. We're doing more stuff with, can you check out before you even get into your parking lot and that type of thing so that the technology takes care of these issues, the payment issues and those type of things, and moves the customer along faster, which turns over those spaces faster. Especially the difference that we see from a food and beverage retail standpoint here, because I get this question sometimes when I get speeches, people say, well, why don't you have more sit down restaurants and that type of thing? But we're 99.9% O&D airport. What I try to explain to people is they get here about 90 minutes before their flight. Say it takes 30 minutes between all their baggage check-in, ticketing, getting through security. And the flight's going to start to board about 30 minutes before it departs. So they really only have about 30 minutes of dwell time. So it's not conducive both for the airport and for the retail and food and beverage providers to get into big sit-down areas like it is at a major transfer airport. We have 3, 4, 5 hours sometimes when you have dwell time. So you're not going to, I tell them, you're not going to buy Pierre Cardin or Longchamp's bags here. It's more retail. It's souvenir, news and gifts, grab and go stuff. And the same with retail. It's got to be fast casual, even if it's sit down or grab and go. And so there's a perception issue you have to work on with the public as to what's the amenities here versus going to an Atlanta or a Paris. You know, there's more dwell time there and you've got international connections that you're making and sometimes you're sitting there longer.
Sure. Well, that makes sense. And when you've got 300% growth and you're heading quickly from 1.5 million to, I think I read these gates are going to take you up to capacity for around 7. Is that?
Yeah, we think once we open, we'll hit about 4.3, 4.4 million this year, the end of the year. Next year, we'll go up some, but until that terminal's done, we're getting to the point where there's just no place else to go. But once that terminal's done, As I said, Allegiant's taking all five gates. They have three gates in the existing terminal. They'll give those up, but we have other airlines that are waiting to utilize those. So you'll see another big jump. I would think that depending on how the economy goes, we'd be over 5 million once that new terminal opens. And I think we can get to 7 million before we have to get to the next phase. But we're already getting the environmental assessments and everything done for phase two of what we call Terminal A, which will connect the ground-based terminal into our main terminal and add three more gates. And we have an overall plan where we'll go up to 32 gates and about 15 million. But that's obviously further in the future. But with this project, we'll have 18 gates. Phase two of that project would get us to 21. And then eventually with the next phases, we can get to 32.
Rick Piccolo. He's the president and CEO of Sarasota Bradenton International Airport. Sarasota Bradenton is going through massive passenger growth right now. And, you know, with all these projects, it's not, one of the things that I've been writing about for the 18 years of these 20 conferences that we're celebrating right now that keeps coming up every few years is funding for the airports.
Yeah.
You've got all these projects going on. Reauthorization as of now is up in the air. You know, you've had a pretty global perspective, have been involved with ACI and other, organizations. What's your take on where that's at and what needs to happen to help make sure that airports, yours and others, can continue to provide these amenities and experiences for passengers?
Well, obviously, I hope Congress gets back to work and passes reauthorization. We need that desperately. I also think, the PFC needs to be increased. It hasn't been increased in over 20 years. And that's a little, in my mind, ridiculous that it hasn't been increased. It's a user fee that helps pay for things. And I know the airlines don't like it, but to me, that's a critical part of fixing our infrastructure. When you really, I was on the ACI World Board for 16 years, served as chair for a couple of years. And I got to visit, in my career, I've been to 47 countries now. And I often said, if a Martian landed on this planet and looked at the airports, they would think that the United States is the developing country and that places like Malaysia and China and the Middle East were developed countries. And it's kind of sad that this is kind of constrained by that. Now, I do understand that when you look at the amount of funding that the U.S. provides to airports, it's pretty significant versus some others where private industry has taken over those airports. And all that looks very attractive should you privatize. But I think that looked very good until COVID. And when you look at what COVID did, all those private airports were really, really suffering, and I think still suffer because they lost so much revenue. And there was no government bailout because they said, you're on your own. You're a private company. Whereas we really got a lot of help from the federal government during COVID to keep things going. So we've come out of it pretty good. And as far as this airport goes, we have the added advantage of before we retired our debt in 2014. So we were debt free. We're doing about $200 million worth of work. And right now we're doing it without incurring any debt. We had about $56 million in the bank that we'll use towards this. We've been successful in getting some bill grant funds that were passed, the bipartisan infrastructure law funds for terminals. The state of Florida is tremendous in its support of airports. It allocates over $300 million a year towards airport projects. And we were successful in getting money, not just from FDOT, but some legislative appropriations towards ours. So the $200 million worth of work we're doing now, we're doing without having to incur any debt. Now, in the future, we'll definitely have to, and we can dedicate PFCs to it. So we have an advantage there as well. Our CPE for airlines is a little over $5. So we're very, very competitive from that standpoint as well. But we need to have some sort of steady stream of revenues to support the system. And it can't just be picked by airlines as to which winners and losers they want. and therefore they're willing to fund a terminal at City X, but not at City Y. And if we're going to give the consumer what they need and really compete in a global marketplace, we need to do a better job of that.
Okay. Do you have a sense on what the likelihood is of a PFC increase? That's been under discussion for, you know, like you said, longer than I've been writing about this industry. And, are there alternative plans that might work for finding different ways to, you know, fund projects?
Well, I don't think there's a good chance of it right now. There's no talk of it in this next, if this reauthorization passes for the next 4 years, we're probably going to not see any change in the PFC for another four. And I've looked at this for a number of years. I'm probably one of the oldest people still in the industry. And one of the things I think we should do is, you know, it's kind of that definition by Mark Twain that you keep doing the same thing and expect a different result is insanity. So one of the things I'd like to see us at least take a look at is there a way we're going to need to get the airlines to come out and support a PFC increase? And when I look at the political realities, airports contribute some money through our PACs, but maybe $50,000-$100,000 a year to candidates. Airlines contribute millions. And that has a great influence on, I often say, there's not a congressman I've met who doesn't tap you on the shoulder and say, I love your airport. Let me know if there's anything I can do for you. I support you 100%. And the minute the vote for PFCs comes, they say no. So I think we have to change our strategy and get the airlines on board. And one of the things that I've always thought might be a possibility is what if we had a PFC of, say, $15 or $20, of which the first $5 goes to the airline. And they can use it for their capital needs. And they can buy airplanes with it, stuff like that. And see if that breaks this log jam where they get a piece of the action. So it's kind of like the mob, you know, everybody's got to get a taste and do it that way and see if that's something that they find attractive. They might not. They might still say, I don't need your money. I still want the control. But we have been trying the same strategy for over 20 years. And as I said, every congressman loves you, every senator loves you until it's time to vote for a PFC increase. And then he said, no, I can't do that because the airlines don't like it. And they're paying a lot more money for their support than we are. And
yes,
there's no way to balance that out.
Millions of dollars is certainly more than hundreds of thousands of dollars.
And, you know, so and to me, if it could be used to buy airplanes, even if you had a Buy American rule in there, then Boeing should love it.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. It's an interesting concept. I'd like to hear more about that. You brought up briefly the labor shortage earlier, You know that along with capacity challenges that you're going through right now. How are you dealing with that? You got any best practices to pass along on making sure that you're staffed well?
We've done pretty well. The best practices, you got to keep increasing pay. Our part-timers now are at about $18 an hour. There's still some labor issues. And part of the problem here in the Sarasota-Bradenton area is cost of housing. We're growing so fast, one of the fastest growing communities and have been for the last 5 or 6 years, that housing costs have gone up quite a bit. So getting a service worker, one, they have to move further away, and then getting them here willing to work is more difficult unless you're doing more in the pay scale area. So that's an issue that we've addressed, and we normally would do pay studies every 3 years, and maybe 1, 2, 3 classifications would see an increase. We did our pay study, and every classification got increases, anywhere from 1 to 4 grades in our pay scale system. So that's one area. We're also looking at whether I think the other thing that we talked to our board just the other month about is trying to establish in our construction work here a child care center, especially for service workers, because that's a big issue for them. A service worker that's maybe making $18 to $20 an hour and then has to drop their child or children off and pay $200, $300, $400, $500 a week, the math doesn't work. So what we're looking at is, do we build something here and either make it low cost or no cost and subsidize it simply to have labor here? Because that has been an issue, not as much for the authority because we pay pretty good, but more for ramp workers, food and beverage, retail. That's been especially difficult. And so I think that's one area that all employers are going to have to look at. But I think the other issues of like either childcare or even these medical clinics are things that employers overall have to look at. And when you look at it from the airport perspective, is it something where you say, look at, we're going to build this and we're going to pay for this, but it's going to be built into the rate base for all the tenants. Sure. Because the tenants will benefit as well. And that takes a different mindset from everyone, that how do we turn employment into not just it's about when you're here at work, and how do we make it so that your whole family is something that's part of our team and we're taking care of them while you're here.
Sure. And then you're exposing more young folks to the airport at a young age.
Exactly.
You never know what dividends that might pay. That one is a fascinating one to me. Pittsburgh did it. I've talked to a couple other airports that are considering it. Unheard of 18, 20 years ago when we were, that just wasn't even on the radar. So,
without a doubt. I mean, when I started as a janitor, it was a minimum wage job, and that was just the way it was. So.
Yeah, it's the times have changed for sure. You kind of started to hit on this with the childcare piece. My next question or questions were going to be, it can be at your home airport, it can be at an airport, one of the dozens and dozens you've traveled through. What's a newer type amenity at airports that's popping up that you like, and is there something that's not at airports that you'd like to see pop up?
I'm trying to think. I mean, airports are pretty much the same. There's nothing. I like the idea of the computerized stuff, the app-based. I'm not a big QR code fan. I don't like sitting in a restaurant and then suddenly I have to get on a phone and have to look at the menu that way. But I do like if they have an app there where you can bring it up pretty easy. I like that. I like the idea of being able to check out very easily, even self-checkout. Self-check-in, all that stuff. I like all the IT stuff that is being done. I'm hopeful that over time that the security checkpoint, it kind of goes back to the Terminator movie where you just walk through it and it scans you as you go along, but that someday they can develop that kind of technology to move the security checkpoint faster. And obviously the check-in of your bags, a common use check-in, self-bagging, stuff like that I like. Okay. Being able to check out your parking quickly, all those types of IT improvements I think are great. I don't know, as I said, maybe that Terminator checkpoint where you just walk through an aisle and it scans you as you're walking is probably something in the future. But I can't think of anything else that makes life much better than that. I think that some airlines may eventually get to where you could check yourself in through the boarding gate so that you kind of have a doorway there and you scan your boarding pass and, on your phone or whatever it is, and it opens the boarding gate, which means less airport employees for the airline and maybe more efficiency as it moves forward. I think the IT stuff is the stuff that is the future until they get to the point where they can transport us like on Star Trek or something. You won't have any airplanes.
That's an interesting thought. But I like the concept of walking through, TSA PreCheck gets you through there pretty quick, the idea of just being able to keep walking and they can scan me on the way is pretty appealing. And it probably means that, you'll have people hanging around longer. You'll be able to put a couple more bars in and I'll have a place where I can get a drink before I get
there. There you go. Our dwell time will increase.
Yep. I like how that all feeds into itself. Rick Piccolo, Sarasota Bradenton Airport president and CEO. I've asked the questions that I've come with. Is there anything you want to hit on that we haven't talked about?
I don't think so. I mean, the only thing that's been really interesting here, I mean, I've been in the business now for over, I started in 1970. So So I'm an old guy. The one thing I found is that's really great in this business is that, and we had our CFO retire a year or so ago, got a new CFO, and another airport asked her for some information. And she came over to me and said, is it okay if I share this information with another airport? Because she came from the private side and they don't share anything with anybody. And I said, oh, yeah. And the thing I find so great about this industry is you can pick up the phone, even call another airport that doesn't know you or an airport director. I can pick it up and call another airport director who's never talked to me before. And you can ask and they'll give you 100% effort help. And that's what I like about this industry. And I even found that when I was with ACI World, that no matter where I went in the world, the airport directors were willing to help you in anything you needed and share information, share best practices. And I think that's one of the unique things in our industry is that people really help each other out. It's not looked at as a competitive situation. I realize that in some places, airports are pretty far apart, so I don't have to worry about it. But in our area, I mean, I've got Tampa and St. Pete Clearwater about 50 miles from here, Fort Myers, Punta Gorda about 80, 100 miles from here, and even Orlando to the east. So in some sense, we are competitive for air service, and we used to lose a lot of traffic to Tampa. But at the same time, we're all in this together, and never once have I had anyone refuse help, or have we ever refused help. If there's a hurricane, we're sending people to where the devastation is and trying to help those airports recover. And if we need a supply of something, when I worked at St. Pete Clearwater, we had a massive electrical problem when a lightning strike hit, and we didn't have enough wire to rewire a lot of the runway. And airports were sending us rolls and rolls of wire to help us out with just one phone call. And that's what I love about this industry.
They might have been running out of storage space on their site and been glad to get rid of it. But
it could be.
And then those airports, if they ever do have a snowstorm, they know they can give you a call with the background you've had as well.
There you go.
Rick Picklow, thank you so much for taking some time. It's been great. I appreciate you fitting us in.
Oh, thank you. I enjoyed it a lot, and I wish you the best.